today on Rocking the Suburbs.
Over the course of their career, Thin Lizzy had 15 different guitarists.
Hey everybody, it is Patrick here on behalf of Jim Linehan. I want to welcome you to this episode of Rockin' Suburbs. And today we're going to be talking to someone who many members of the community know from Suburbs Fest and other calls to our podcast. And we're going to be talking about Ireland's Thin Lizzy, celebrating their music, their legacy, and why there's never been a better time to dive into their catalog. So with me is Joe Fleischer. Joe, how are you?
I'm doing great, Patrick. Thanks for having me to talk about my favorite band.
Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to it. Now, I have to preface this with another case of briefly error code Patrick. Joe had mentioned this to us a while ago for St. Patrick's Day. And it was sitting there, and I missed it, and I apologize for that very much. But as these things sometimes do, they kind of work themselves out. We have an anniversary that we are going to release this episode on, and let's start really briefly. Joe, just tell us real quick what that anniversary is tied to Thin Lizzy on April 13th.
Thin Lizzy released their, what I think is their best record, Black Rose, a rock legend, which is very much, Irish tinged, throughout. Mm-hmm. And, that album came out in 1979 and, kind of represents them at the height of their powers, I think.
Beautiful, beautiful. So that, makes perfect sense. So why don't you start off, Joe, you know, you love Thin Lizzy, and we really wanted the chance to dig into some Thin Lizzy stuff. We haven't done nearly enough on Rock in the Suburbs, but how did you become a fan when it all started?
I was aware of Thin Lizzy, I think, the way everybody is, from classic rock radio. But mm-hmm. In the 90s, for a time, I had a long drive, and I found their Live and Dangerous album, which is pretty much their Kiss Alive or their Frampton Comes Alive album.
It's yes.
The double album, 17 songs of their best songs up to that point. I think it was their seventh or eighth album. So it collects the best of the very best. And I started listening to it on a daily basis. And then that from there, I started getting into their catalog backwards and forwards until I had all 12 studio albums that they recorded over their career, which is like 1971 to 83. And I should say that, you know, in the U.S., like myself, many of us only heard The Boys Are Back in Town.
Yeah.
Which reached number 12, I think, on Billboard here. Was a bigger hit overseas. And the Jailbreak album was also strong, but overseas in the British charts, for example, over their 12-year run, they had 15 top 40 singles and four top 10s. So they were a much bigger band over there over the course of their career.
And they uniquely blended sort of Irish history and legend and kind of myth into their music, right? In a way that not another band I could think of anyway, you know, does it.
There aren't many rock bands where you hear a Tura Lura Lura in the lyrics, but Thin Lizzy has that in a couple of places. I think I heard other people explain it, like, you know, bands like U2 sort of universalize their sound to to appeal to the whole world, which they have done. The leader of Thin Lizzy, his name is Phil Lynott, and he was a very proud Irishman, and was, you know, studied Ireland's history and legends, and all of that comes out in their albums and songs.
Absolutely. And I love that you've noted here that there are two soccer or football connections to Thin Lizzy. I love it. And first one kind of blows my mind, but let's start with the second one. You mentioned Phil Lynott. He was a big Manchester United fan. I think I might have known this, but I didn't know about his friendship with one of the most famous Man United players of all time.
Who is George Best? And George Best is mentioned in at least one song, For Those Who Love to Live, and they're also, they've been photographed together. And I think that connection might come from the time that Phil's mother owned a hotel, more of a Airbnb in maybe in Manchester, but he made a lot of connections with famous people through that hotel, which was kind of attracted artists and athletes and rock and rollers.
It seems like it was quite a place. It really does. I've read a couple of stories about it, and really, it's pretty fascinating. But I'd love this. So I'll just read here from the outline. Next time the Boys in Back in Town comes on the radio, think about whether it could be about a soccer team returning to Dublin to start a new season. That's brilliant. And is that what you think it's about?
I've heard different things that it could be about a gang. It could be, but to me, the way people are announcing it to one another suggests to me that it is a football team, that they are coming home and all the things you can expect from that, including, you know, nice weather and going to the games and seeing those guys around town. Yeah. Friday night they'll be dressed to kill down at Dino's Bar and Grill. The drink will flow and blood will spill. And if the boys want to fight, you better let them. That you boxed in the corner blasting out my favorite song. The nights are getting warmer, it won't be long. Won't be long till summer comes. Now that the boys are here again.
I love it. I love that. I listened to that again and For Those Who Love to Live earlier today, and I can really get behind that. I think it's fantastic. Definitely not what I would have thought, you know, the 15 or 16-year-old who heard The Boys Are Back in Town on the radio for the first time was probably thinking about, but I like this a lot. I really do. So the band's career started with a surprise hit. Tell us about that.
They did a rock and roll rave up of Whiskey in the Jar, which is a traditional Irish song, and it became a huge hit in the UK in 1972, even though it was not on their first album or their second. And in fact, the band did not like to play it. Let me back up and make another point. Over the course of their career, Thin Lizzy had 15 different guitarists, if you include people who sat in for a couple of shows or substituted. But one of them, Scott Gorham, came in during that Boys Are Back in Town period, and he did not enjoy playing that song, and he thought it kind of pigeonholed them as a Irish roots kind of band, which they were not at that point. So they never played it from the mid 70s on until their final shows. But it really helped launch them and sustain them over the first five or six albums of their career, which did not have a lot of hits on them. But they were able to tour successfully and keep it going. And the record company was always looking for another another hit.
It's interesting, and I guess we should note for those who may not know that Phil Lynott was not a guitar player. Well, he did play the guitar, but he played the bass guitar and was the front man of this group, which that in itself made him a little bit unusual. But this twin guitar setup that he had around him and sort of was his vision was extremely influential, right? The way these two twin guitar harmony type sounds were created impacted a lot of things.
Yes, it did. And it comes from at the height of their Whiskey in the Jar popularity, Eric Bell, who is still with us, went through a difficult period with the touring and drinking and carousing, and he quit the band pretty suddenly. And Phil Lynott decided he was never going to have just one guitarist. He would always have two in case something happened. And we'll talk about later, Thin Lizzy had a lot of bad luck in that department. But anyway.
Yeah,
the twin guitar thing grew from that. And there were other bands who did it previously, but I've seen quotes from the bass player of Iron Maiden and Metallica's James Hetfield cited those guitar harmonies as a key influence on the early Metallica albums. And of course, Metallica also did a cover of Whiskey in the Jar.
Yeah.
And has shouted out Phil Lynott and Thin Lizzy over the years quite a lot.
Pretty fascinating. It really is that it goes back that far and is that influential in what we consider now this massive, you know, mainstream metal sound. Pretty cool. Well, how about we listen to some music? What do you think we should start with, Joe?
I think a good starting point is Wild One. Okay. It's one of my favorite songs. It's from the Fighting album in 1975, and that was just when Scott Gorham, the Californian in the band, came in with Brian Robertson. And it's unlike a lot of the rock songs or harder rock songs that Thin Lizzy had, Wild One is more of a tears in your beer kind of song. It's melodic, bittersweet, and a little bit romantic, I think.
Wild One, won't you please come home? You've been away too long, will ya? We need you home, we need you near. Come back, Wild One.
Joe, you note here that Wild One kind of marks the emergence of the lineup, the key lineup that would take them into Jailbreak, probably their most successful U.S. album, and also The Boys in Back in Town, their breakthrough song. And so, as you touched on, that was a key development in the history of the band right around this time, right?
Yeah, I think the most solid lineup is that one. It was Phil Lynott on bass, Scott Gorham, who was a Californian who came to England trying to get into, I think his brother-in-law was in Supertramp and he was hoping that he'd get on with that band, but instead he found out about an audition that Thin Lizzy were having. And then there was a Brian Robertson was a young hotshot guitarist from Scotland who joined. And then their drummer is just unbelievable, Brian Downey. And he was in the band from the beginning to the end and beyond.
So during this time, they had a hit, you know, a big hit, top 10, top 20 hit with Boys Are Back in Town, right around in the mid-70s there. Did they come over to the United States and tour? And maybe this is where a little bit of the bad luck actually begins, right?
Yes, I think it was. I think they had toured in Britain and around Europe, and they were planning to come to the United States, but at the last moment, they might have done two or three shows here. I don't remember, but Lynott came down with hepatitis, and they had to cancel the entire tour. And of course, people say that, you know, with the promoters, if a band cancels, it can put a stain on them. But they did tour the next year. They opened for Queen across the U.S. And they did play shows in the U.S. in 1970.
Brian Robertson didn't make it through the tour. As you note here, he actually hurt his hand in a bar fight and Gary Moore had to step in as the replacement.
Yeah. Gary Moore stepped in as the temporary replacement. He and Phil Lynott had been friends since they were kids. Basically they were in an early band together and he stepped in and finished that tour.
But Phil had his backup guitarist at least. So they didn't have to wait completely for Gary Moore to show up. They still were at a creative peak at this point, right? Johnny the Fox in 1976, and then aforementioned Live and Dangerous came out in 78. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a number two hit in Live and Dangerous hit number two on the album charts in the UK that year. In 78. And it's a phenomenal album. Like I said before, it's 17 songs. It's them at their absolute peak. There was something fun that happened last year or 2 years ago, I think. They came out with a newly remastered 8 CD box set of Live and Dangerous, which Live and Dangerous was from a collection of shows in London and I think Philadelphia. But the new box set was 8 different shows complete and just amazing. They were great every single night.
Yeah, I mean, they had to have been so tight from playing, you know, all that time. It's incredible how that band sounded. I mean, in many cases, and I don't know what your thoughts are, but some of their live stuff is better or just as powerful as some of the stuff they did in the studio, which is saying something.
Yeah, I think it's one of the bands that, and I can think of others, but there are some bands, Clutch, for example, that the magic that they create on stage just cannot be not be caught on tape in a studio. And I think that was very much the case with Thin Lizzy. And I'm trying to think of others who are like that. But Thin Lizzy is definitely in that category.
So do you have a favorite song on Live and Dangerous that got you into Thin Lizzy all those years ago?
I think there's a couple. One is Emerald, which is really an ode to Ireland and its history. It talks about a specific battle, but it's a fast galloping rock song. It's really got the feel of a lot of Iron Maiden songs.
Yeah.
On bass. Mastodon did a great cover of it.
Yes.
A few years ago. And it's also a showcase for Brian Downey, the drummer, who started out in like a pipe and drum band, the marching band. And his style is very much grows out of that. And I just think he's one of the most underrated drummers there are. And thankfully, he's still playing. He's got his own band. It's called Brian Downey's Live and Dangerous, and they play around Dublin and in Ireland.
wheels and their swords, to fight the fight they believe to be right, overthrow the overlords. To the town where there was plenty, they brought plunder, sword and flame. When they left the town it was empty, children would never play again. Aboard the battle cry, my back reached near the border. There were many more to die. Then onward over the mountain, onward towards the sea. They called the flame the emerald. Without it, they couldn't leave.
I've always liked Mastodon, and when I heard they were going to do and did a cover of Emerald, that made me like them even more. I just thought, this is a great choice. That definitely shows, you know, their depth of rock and roll history. I loved that. What about the other songs of those 17? Are there others that are your favorite?
I think, well, one of the ones I mentioned is Dancing in the Moonlight. It's caught me in its spotlight because it's from Bad Reputation, but it's really softer and soulful. It feels very connected to Van Morrison's Moon Dance. And in some ways, Lynette's and Morrison's voices are similar, and they both delve into Irish history and culture, and it also reminds me of Bruce Springsteen's "Spirit in the Night." It's kind of the same, the kind of themes around it, and I love that song.
I love that comparison. I think that's great. I really, really do. There's something about the lyrics of Thin Lizzy, the storytelling and the romantic vision that Phil Lynott puts across, that is very similar to that of Springsteen. And you wouldn't necessarily think, even though they were playing at the same time, that those two, you know, sounds are really compatible, but there's a lot of similarities. And I think because I listened to Springsteen a lot when I was growing up and kind of getting my sea legs about music, when I went to Thin Lizzy, which was much later than you know, you would think I might have discovered them, it was very natural to me. And I think a lot of it was because of that, listening to Springsteen.
Yeah, I think they are similar in several ways. And I think they spent a day together. If my memory is correct, I think they were both like at a hotel in L.A. on the same day. And they both had like an afternoon at the pool that they spent together just hanging out. Yeah,
that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
You also mentioned Still in Love with You, the version on Live and Dangerous.
Yeah, that's probably the song that really got me, because when I first started listening, I was kind of in a relationship turmoil. This was long before my wife, and that song on long drives, I was just constantly drawn to it. And it was on their Nightlife album from 74. And then on the version on the Live and Dangerous, sort of extends and the guitar solos adds 2 full minutes. There's a lot of sustained emotional guitar solos from both Scott Gorham and Brian Robertson.
Still in love with you.
Joe, very, very, very much. And this is just the start of our conversation about Thin Lizzy. We got some more coming up. Tomorrow we're going to start into the history of the remainder of Thin Lizzy's career. Also going to discuss Black Rose, the album that was released on April 13th, 1979. And there are some great Joe stories to come in this Thin Lizzy series. So thank you, Joe, very, very much for not only the suggestion, but sharing your vast knowledge and love of Thin Lizzy. Fantastic. All right, we'll go out with a little more from Thin Lizzy's Live and Dangerous, and then from there we will jump back in tomorrow. So make sure to tune in then to hear some more Thin Lizzy. We will talk to you guys tomorrow.
But I asked you for a dance. Now we go steady to the pictures. I always get chocolate stains on my pants. And my father is going crazy. Says I'm living in a trance. But I'm dancing in the moonlight. It's got me in its spotlight. It's alright dancing in the moonlight. On this long hot summer night. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm on the streets again. I disobeyed another warning. I should have been in my tent. I won't get out until Sunday. I'll have to say I stayed with friends. Oh, but it's a habit worth forming if it means to justify the ends. Dancing in the moonlight. It's got me in its spotlight. It's alright, dancing in the moonlight on this long, hot summer night. Helping hands on saxophone from the Graham Parker Band.
Like, he made a lot of connections with famous people through that hotel, which was kind of attractive artists and athletes and rock and rollers.